That's typically the way it goes. I'm the rogue, unfortunately. My passion has always been in theater. My father only let me come to New York out of guilt, and possibly to get rid of me for a few years so I wouldn't ruin his extended honeymoon phase.
I'm not following.
My mother waited until I was done with high school to hand my father the divorce papers. Then she moved to Alaska. I'd applied to Randolph before that happened, and my mother had been a big supporter. My father, not so much. Of course, he found it in his heart to support my decision when he brought his new girlfriend home to meet me 2 weeks after my mother left. Ouch. She was his secretary at Scott Pharmaceuticals. She'd been working under my dad for 2 years. I'm fairly certain he'd been dipping his quill in the company inkwell for a long while. So, he let me go to New York.
How convenient for him.
Bancroft's derision makes me happy. Obviously, my father was smart enough to draw up a prenup, so he wasn't just letting his penis guide his actions. He'd done the same with my mother, but the money had never been the thing for her. I'd been her glue. And when I was all grown up and ready to make my own way, she'd finally walked away. It had been so difficult to lose her like that at first. I'd been angry, until I realized what she'd sacrificed, and that my father was just another privileged asshole. Oh, it gets better. As soon as the divorce was final, he married her, and my whore mother is 4 years older than me.
Pardon?
I'm pleased by how horrified Bancroft sounds. I mean my stepmother. She's 28, and I'm 24.
That's just gross.
Sadly typical. At least she's older than me. She's actually 5 years younger than my half-sister and 7 years younger than my half-brother.
That's just wrong.
On so many levels. And they all work together. She's moved to a different department, so she's not directly under him anymore.
So many tasteless jokes there.
Bancroft says derisively. Right? But he's still her boss, and she's still the employee he screwed his wife and family over for. I think it's rather ironic that he deals in erectile dysfunction medications. Of course he needs a trophy wife to parade around, so everyone knows he can still get it up. It's embarrassing.
I can see why New York would have been alluring, and still is.
Honestly, I probably would have murdered her had I stayed in Rhode Island, so moving was really the only viable option.
Very practical, and far less complicated than murder, Bancroft says.
I almost wish we were on video chat so I could see his smile. Exactly. I don't think I'm designed for murder. I mean, I love watching horror movies, but I can barely manage preparing meat. So I think I probably would have sucked at getting rid of the body. Bancroft laughs, then yawns. Am I boring you with my tales of murder?
I'm so sorry. I think the carbs and the jet lag are finally hitting me.
I'll let you go so you can get a few hours of sleep before you have to be up for meetings.
It's probably a good idea. I'll touch base later in the week, okay?
Okay. Bye, Bancroft.
You know, you can call me Bane.
Like the bane of my existence? That gets me another sleepy, gravelly-sounding laugh.
Is that what I am?
Not even a little. You are my white knight in shining armor, saving me from living in a box on the corner, singing on the subway to earn a living. As much as it's supposed to be a joke, it really is the only thing keeping me from having to move back to Rhode Island for at least the next month.
I'm not so sure I deserve that title, considering my role in sabotaging your last audition, he says ruefully.
I'm confident this makes up for it.
That eases my guilty conscience more than you can know. Night, Ruby.
The warmth in his voice wraps around me like a hug. Night, Bane. Chapter 10. Luckless. Ruby. I don't hear from Bancroft for the next 2 days, apart from a few text messages asking how things are going. So he'll know they're alive. I sent him pictures of Francesca and Tiny, with little thought bubbles proclaiming their love for me. Bancroft thinks it's funny. After that, the phone calls come almost nightly. Bancroft has taken to calling me around dinner time. Well, dinner time for me, but since he's across the ocean, it's more like bedtime for him. Which I don't mind in the least, especially since 2 nights ago he video called instead of voice called because he missed seeing Francesca. If I put him on speakerphone while she's in the room, she goes nuts, and I wanted him to see how cute she is. Both times we video chatted, he's been wearing a white undershirt that hugs the muscles in his chest and outlines the incredible abs hidden underneath the thin fabric. I don't get to see what he's wearing from the waist down, since we're clearly not staring at each other's crotches while we talk. But I like to picture him in boxer briefs that also hug all the good parts and outline his package nicely. Dinner conversation usually starts with Bancroft asking about Francesca and Tiny. Then I ask him how his day was. He tells me all about things his brother does to drive him insane, and I point out he does a lot of the same things. When he asks how the job hunt is going for me, I tell him it's great. I've managed to line up 2 auditions for next week, but both of the roles are small and not likely to be enough for me to come up with a down payment for any kind of apartment, let alone allow me to start paying down my debts. 2 days ago, I secured part-time employment in a bar serving drinks. I had reservations about the place, partly because the manager hired me on the spot, with barely a glance at my resume. Apparently, my bad plan radar was accurate. I lasted all of 1 shift, not because I'm incapable of serving drinks and bar food, but because being propositioned by the manager during my first shift did not bode well for the long term. I pocketed the $120 in tips and walked. I'm trying to stay positive. I have the auditions. I still have time. At least that's what I keep telling myself. Over the next week, I take the job hunting business seriously. When I'm not playing with Francesca or letting Tiny crawl up and down my arm, I spend most of my days scouring the internet for potential auditions and seeking agent representation or passing out my resume at every damn place I can think of. I bomb the first audition. Just choke. Like, literally. I'm in the middle of my audition, singing my heart out, when all of a sudden I'm choking on something. I double over, coughing, and spit out a giant housefly, covered in my saliva. It's everything I can do not to throw up on stage again. The night before my second audition, I get nervous. For good reason. I feel like I'm jinxed. I've been practicing my dance routine all afternoon, and I have it down perfectly. I know every step, every word to the song. I can perform it in my sleep. I don't take any chances with food. I eat a cup of soup and drink hot lemon water. Bancroft tells me to break a leg. It's supposed to be good luck, but I go to sleep feeling uneasy anyway. I wake up in the middle of the night screaming bloody murder because I have a nightmare that I left the lid off Tiny's terrarium and she escaped her habitat. In my dream, I felt something crawling on me, and I jumped out of bed, stepping on something warm and squishy. In reality, I do jump out of bed, but the warm and squishy thing is a wet washcloth I left on the floor after I'd given myself my nightly pre-bed Bancroft-inspired orgasm. In my haste to get away from the terrifying washcloth, I slipped on the floor and landed on my ass. I should have known from the lack of sleep
the bad dream, and the bruised bottom that the audition was going to be a failure. The next day, I nearly do break a leg, just like Bancroft told me to. The dance routine I know so well goes sideways when I faceplant on the stage in the middle of the routine, thanks to a rogue puddle of water. I go home, or back to the condo, feeling doomed. It's as if karma is giving me the middle finger. When I get home from my epically terrible day, where I not only embarrass myself on stage, but also get turned down for not one, but three cashier positions. Word to the wise, a triple threat award does not make one universally employable. All I want to do is curl up in bed and forget this day ever happened. Bancroft will be back in little more than 3 weeks, and I'm still minus a job. It's not good. The envelope of cash, which contained the full 5 weeks' worth of my stipend, well, double it, but it's not my fault if his math is off, helps a lot. But I need to pay down my bills and save for an apartment. I have another audition lined up in 2 days, but with the way things are going, I'm worried I'll bomb this one too. The only thing I seem to be good at is taking care of Francesca and Tiny. I almost caved when I spoke to my father earlier in the week. He asked how things were going and if I'd sorted out my apartment situation. I played dumb and asked him what he meant. Apparently his brainless secretary told him I'd called about my bank account, even though I'd said she didn't need to. There was no way I was going to admit to not being able to take care of the situation on my own. I'm not at point critical quite yet. It's close, though. I kick off my shoes and cross over to Francesca's cage. A few days after Bane left, I moved it to the main living area, which is where it stays for the most part. She's already scaling the bars, jumping around and doing tricks for me. "Hi, pretty girl," I coo. "Did you miss me today? I missed you." I unlatch the cage and lift her out. She cuddles into me, nuzzling into my cleavage like she's looking for snacks. It's her signature move every time I pick her up, as if she thinks I'll have lost food down there. She's a bright light in my otherwise shitty day. I carry her down the hall, exhausted and defeated, looking for anything that will brighten my spirits. I grab my phone on the way, in case we end up chilling out and watching movies. It's probably one of my favorite things to do, especially after a long, crappy day. Francesca loves nature documentaries, and she's great company when I watch horror movies. I pass my own bedroom and keep going. In the past 2 weeks, I've only slept in my room once. That was the first night I stayed here. Half of my boxes still line the wall, unpacked. A constant reminder that I need a job. Any job, and soon. I push open the door to his room. The bed is made, because it's so much more fun to mess it up when it's already perfect. Last week I relented and changed the sheets, because they were smelling less than fresh. But I sprayed them with Bancroft's cologne so they still smelled like him. It's not authentic, but it's kind of the same. I refuse to acknowledge that it's a little creepy, this behavior of mine, but I tell myself it's for the benefit of Francesca, so she doesn't think he's abandoned her. I put her down on Bancroft's bed, and she does her little nose-twitch-sniffle thing, bouncing around, waiting for me to start the game. I'm tired and grumpy, but this at least will put me in a semi-better mood. I pull the sheet up over her, and she makes this little noise of excitement. We play for a good 15 or 20 minutes, until she's had enough and all she wants to do is cuddle. It's just after 6, but I didn't sleep well last night and the failed audition and unsuccessful attempts to secure employment exhausts me, so I turn off all the lights and find a good horror movie. Sometimes torture and fear are a good way to remind me my life isn't so bad. I don't even have the energy to consider making dinner. Francesca wriggles her way under my shirt and peeks her head out through the neckline. She likes being close to my boobs, right in the valley. I let her snuggle in and close my eyes. I just need a few minutes to manage the disappointment. Digital ringing pulls me from sleep. I blink a bunch of times, trying to throw off the haze. I realize the sound is coming from my phone. I check the clock. It's 8:03. At night. Shit. Bancroft said he'd call at 7, and he's prompt with phone calls, which means he's been trying to reach me for the past hour. I fumble around and hit the answer button, my uncoordinated fingers struggling to grab hold of the device.
Ruby? Are you there? Ruby?
Bancroft's concern is clear in his tone. Here, I rasp. Fell asleep. Sorry, here now.
Is the connection bad? I can't see anything.
The room is dark. I didn't even manage to start the movie, apparently. Hold on. I reach across for the lamp on the side table and flick it on. The brightness blinds me, and I drop my phone on the bed, rubbing my eyes for a second. I glance around, looking for Francesca, but I don't see her right away.
Ruby?
Right here. I'm so sorry. Did you have to call a bunch of times?
Just a few. Is everything okay? Are you feeling all right?
I'm good. Fine. Just a long day. How are you? I finally focus on the screen, not my surroundings. Bancroft is in a bed. Shirtless. In a bed. His hair is wet, like he's fresh out of the shower. Did I mention he's in bed? Shirtless. I can see myself in the tiny screen in the corner. I look like a bag of dog poop. My hair is all over the place. I have crease lines in my face from the pillow. Bancroft's brows come down.
Where are you?
Huh? I ask, because the answer to that question isn't exactly one I want to give or explain. He tilts his head to the side.
Are you in my bedroom?
What? Panic flares for a second as I struggle to come up with a reason for my being in here.
You're in my bed.
Oh, Jesus. Is he mad? His eyes are dark. Although the room he's in is not well lit, so that could totally account for the whole darkness aspect. I was cleaning, and I moved Francesca in here, and then we were playing hide in the sheets, and I must have fallen asleep. And I'm sorry about that. I'll wash your sheets. A smile quirks the corner of his mouth.
You don't have to apologize for playing with Francesca. How's my girl?
For a very brief moment, I think he's referring to me as his girl, but then I realize he's asking about his pet, who is nowhere to be found. She's good. We were cuddling, and I fell asleep.
Where is she now?
Hold on. I put the phone down so all he gets is a view of the ceiling. Then I hop off the bed and call Francesca's name a couple of times. I look under it, because that's a logical place for her to be.
Ruby?
We were cuddling when I fell asleep, I call out. All the horror stories I've heard come back to haunt me. She better not have escaped. It's what ferrets are known for. I glance at the bedroom door. It's closed, so she has to be in here with me. I cross over to the bathroom. Sometimes she likes to hide in the discarded towels. Because in addition to sleeping in Bancroft's bed, I've also taken to using his shower. It's even nicer than the one in my room, and slightly more complicated, but I managed to figure it out without scalding myself. She's not in the bathroom, though.
Ruby?
She's in here somewhere. I glance at the bed and note movement near the pillows. A little brown head peeks out from inside the case. There she is. I return to the bed and scoop her up, then prop my phone against the headboard so I can hold her and talk with free hands. You scared me, I coo at her, my voice cracking a little. Daddy wants to see you.
so relieved that I haven't lost her, tears spring to my eyes. I blink them back as I hold Francesca in front of my face and wave one of her little paws at Bancroft.
Are you coming down with something?
He asks. No, no, I'm fine, I assure him, even though I'm not. I almost think I have things under control, and then he asks the one question designed to put me over the edge.
How'd the audition go today?
I open my mouth to speak, but all that comes out is a squeak, and those stupid tears leak out of the corners of my eyes.
Ruby?
Francesca squirms out of my grasp when I wave a hand around in the air. I'm trying to breathe, but I can't seem to manage it without making horrible, high-pitched sounds.
Babe, what's wrong?
I try to get myself under control, at least a little. I stammer out. I bombed the audition.
I'm sure it wasn't that bad.
I fell on my face in the middle of my dance routine. I have a bruise on my cheek. I lean in closer so he can see the slight bluish tint to my cheek. It's tender to the touch. Bancroft purses his lips.
I'm so sorry.
What if I can't do this? What if I end up having to go back to Rhode Island to live with my father and whore mother? What if I have to work for my father? What if his skank wife really is my boss? The panic is starting to set in again. I don't want to have an emotional breakdown on Bancroft. I don't want him to think I'm some loopy, unstable nutter. I want to have my life sorted out, like Amy does. I need to get my shit together before Bancroft comes home. Because the more I talk to him, the more I want to do more than talk to him. At this point, I want to do more than just get naked with him, but I definitely still want to do that. And sometimes it feels like maybe he wants the same thing. But he's not going to want anything to do with an unemployed, homeless crybaby with more than $10,000 in credit card and loan debt. My internal pep talk isn't helping with the tears. Maybe my dad's right. Maybe I can't hack it. I just wanted to prove him wrong. My voice is still pitchy.
Take a breath, Ruby.
Bancroft's voice is soft, lilting. I do as he says and suck in a deep breath.
That's it, babe. Good girl. Take another one for me.
I take another, slower, deep breath. He nods his approval.
And another.
I keep taking deep breaths until the panic subsides. I'm so embarrassed, I mutter when I get myself under control again.
Don't be. You've had a rough day. It knocks you down a little. You have to get back up and brush it off.
I let out a soft laugh.
I have complete confidence that you'll get a role. You're too talented not to.
He's never seen me act or dance. He's heard me sing, because I do it unconsciously sometimes. He'll put on music while we're talking just to make me hum. I wish I had the confidence in me that you seem to.
You know what I'd do if I was there with you?
His voice is so soothing. I want to know what that sounds like in my ear, with his body covering mine and no clothes getting in the way. What's that? I sound less pitchy and more breathy.
I'd get you drunk.
And then take advantage of me? I mean it to be sarcastic, not hopeful. How mortifying. His expression turns serious.
I'd hope I wouldn't have to resort to such tactics to get you into bed with me.
Well, I'm already in your bed, so we're halfway there, aren't we? Bancroft's tongue sweeps out to wet his bottom lip.
I think you should pour yourself a glass of wine. I have a bottle here. We can drink together.
Did you have a bad day, too?
I've had better.
I grab my phone and carry it to the kitchen so I can raid his wine fridge. I decide on a crisp white. Also, his sheets aren't dark enough for me to consider drinking red. Once I've poured myself a glass, I return to the bedroom. Francesca is curled up on top of the comforter. As soon as I'm half lying down, she pulls her favorite move and wriggles her way under my shirt, peeking her head out through the neckline between my boobs. I show Bancroft, who seems to appreciate her choice of location. He tells me about his day, about a multi-million-dollar mistake someone on his team made, and about the phone call from his father. His troubles don't necessarily make me feel better, but they certainly put my own into perspective. At least one small error isn't going to cost me millions. Chapter 11. Party time. Ruby. On account of my bombing my audition, Amy forces me into accompanying her to the party I was intent on avoiding. She thinks I need to get out and have some fun. I think a pint of Ben and Jerry's sounds like a better time than spending my evening with a bunch of stuck-up snobs. But I haven't seen much of Amy since moving into Bancroft's condo. So I relent. When Amy said party, I stupidly assumed it meant there would be lots of people to mingle with. I could put on my Ruby snob face, impart the occasional witty response, and rotate through the guests, air-kissing and smiling. I also assumed it would be in a hall, or a ballroom of some kind, as is typical. What I don't expect is to end up at some last-name-first mansion with 11 other guests as the only single female in the room. Did I mention that there's only one single man in the room as well? This is possibly the worst and least subtle attempt at matchmaking ever. I don't need to be set up with anyone. I have bigger things to worry about. I'm holding a glass of Prosecco. There seems to be no non-alcoholic option available at this point, and I'm thirsty. I spent an hour on Bane's treadmill, staring at the life-sized portrait of him reflected in the window overlooking the river. Working out would be way easier if I could look at him all day, every day. The impulse to pull a Ziploc baggie from my purse is strong as the server makes the rounds with a tray of appetizers. I'm slowly conditioning out that behavior. Thanks to Bane's grocery delivery service, I finally know what it feels like to be full again. On real food that doesn't come in a cellophane package. I'm actually starting to fill out this dress. It's too bad my hips are the first to expand, and my boobs are the last. Last name first, number 11, the single guy in the room, is droning on and on about his Ivy League education and how people assume the high-level position he has at douchebags and douche nozzles was handed to him. But that's untrue. He worked hard to get where he is. I call bullshit. Not out loud, just in my head. I know for a fact that Wentworth Williams, his name is even alliterated, father, is a 50% shareholder in the company. And that means if he wants his Ivy League educated douche of a son to work there, all he has to do is send over a resume and poof, a new job title is created. My father does not work this way. Not for me, anyway. I know I'll be starting at the bottom rung. And that wouldn't bother me so much if my siblings hadn't been given corner offices and nice titles from the moment they started working for him. Not like I want to even work for him at all, but fair is fair. If I'm going to partake in nepotism, I should get what I can out of it. Wentworth is still talking. I'm still nodding and smiling politely, asking the occasional question to appear interested when I tune into what he's saying long enough to know he's still going on about himself. It's as if he's sharing his entire resume with me. Dating in the upper class is weird. People parade themselves around like show ponies, waiting for someone to pin them with
first prize. While he takes another truffle steak tartare blah blah and some goose liver pate on a blah blah cracker, I do a furtive check around the room. I've been standing for the last 20 minutes. I'm wearing heels, and they're becoming uncomfortable. My calves are seizing because of the hours spent on the treadmill. Amy is halfway across the room. Armstrong has his arm around her waist. Actually, I'm pretty sure he keeps goosing her while she talks to one of the other fiancés, based on the way her eyes go suddenly wide and his grin becomes pervy for a moment. When her gaze meets mine from across the room, she gives me one of her apologetic smiles. I just glare. She does the eye-widening, pleading thing. There's no way she would try to set me up with the guy on purpose. Bet it was Armstrong's doing. Asshole.
Armstrong says you were in theater.
Wentworth forces me to stop shooting death ray lasers from my eyeballs and brings my attention back to him. It's not exactly a question, but it's the first thing he said that isn't about him. I am.
But isn't your family in pharmaceuticals?
He tilts his head a little, blinking a few times, a small smile pulling up one corner of his mouth. It's an expression of fake attentiveness. His eyes keep dropping below my neck. I'm not surprised. My cleavage is epic. That I'm not currently following in my family footsteps makes me seem like a bit of a wild card, which, admittedly, I am. For some of these douchebags, it means I'm something to tame. My father is, yes.
But not your mother.
They're divorced. My mother's an artist. I'm hoping the divorce revelation will turn him off. It doesn't.
Ah. So that's where you get your creative side from, then.
He leans in closer and fingers a lock of my hair. It's pretty close to my boob, so a finger graze also happens.
Is that where your beauty comes from as well?
I'm sure he thinks he's smooth. I'm also sure many women would simper, put a hand on his forearm, and giggle. I don't do any of those things. Instead, I ask a question I probably shouldn't, considering present company and Amelie's future role in this unfortunate social circle. Why? Are you into MILFs? His eyes go wide. Because I'm being so scandalous. And then a questioning, somewhat uncertain smile spreads across his face. I suppose he's attractive. He's tall, more than 6 feet, but he's lanky. He's athletic enough, but it's clear he spends more time and energy behind his desk than he does working out. Normally, that wouldn't even factor into someone's dateability for me, but my standards seem to have shifted in Bancroft's direction. Wentworth leans in even closer, so his mouth is next to my ear. He's been drinking hard liquor, some expensive brand of scotch, based on the peat moss scent, so his breath is sharp.
I'd like to get into you.
I take a small step back. There are several possible interpretations of that horrible line. Based on his tone and his facial expression, I have a feeling he means it in the naked horizontal sense. I decide to play it stupid. I'm sorry? He blinks a couple of times, assessing my reaction. I'm feigning idiocy, although my distaste is actually real. He covers his dirty comment with another smile.
I'd like to get to know you.
Isn't that what we're doing? I take a sip of my Prosecco. My glass is almost empty.
It'd be nice if we had a little more privacy, don't you think?
He makes a small gesture to the rest of the party attendees. Most of them are engaged in a group conversation. It's only me who's been cornered. And Amy seems to be tethered to Armstrong.
I don't have a chance to respond to that, because the chef appears from the kitchen to inform us that dinner is ready to be served. I try to sit beside Amy, but my attempt is thwarted by Wentworth. He puts himself between the two of us, which isolates me at the end of the table. And then the real flirting begins. I get the knee brush about 20 times. Then he decides he's worried about my hair ending up in my food, so he brushes it over my shoulder. By the time they bring out the main course, which is filet mignon and lobster tails, I'm about ready to stab him with my steak knife. I'm also on my second glass of Prosecco, or maybe it's my third. One of the servers keeps topping it off when I'm not looking, so it stays at the same level of fullness consistently. My face is feeling rather warm, so now would be a good time to switch to water. Just as they set my plate in front of me, my phone buzzes in my purse. I have it on vibrate, but I can feel it against my leg. I ignore it. I'm not expecting a call from Bancroft tonight, because it's a travel day. He has a flight to Amsterdam, and I don't think I'm supposed to hear from him until sometime tomorrow, although with the time difference, it can get confusing. The buzzing in my purse stops for a few seconds before it starts again. The third time my foot starts to vibrate, I excuse myself to the bathroom. I rummage through my purse on the way, hoping to locate my phone before it stops ringing. It's Bancroft. He's trying to video call me. My stomach does one of those little flippy things. I don't even consider how rude it is that I'm taking a call in the middle of dinner. My excuse is that I'm staying in this man's house, taking care of his pets, so if he contacts me, it must be important. Mostly, I'm just dying to talk to him, as it's been more than 24 hours since the last call. I hit the answer button as I step into the powder room and close the door behind me. Hey! Hi! I have to slap around in the semi-dark to find the light switch.
Ruby, is everything okay?
Just fine. The words come out whispery and a little breathless. I want to keep my voice down because, well, I'm on the phone in the bathroom in the middle of dinner, and also, Bancroft is reclined on a couch in a white undershirt. His hair is freshly washed, but he's sporting a serious 5 o'clock shadow. He looks exhausted, and sexy, and exhausted, but so, so hot. His brow furrows. It's also sexy.
Are you in a bathroom?
What? I look around, like I'm unsure, even though I chose to lock myself in here. Oh, yes, I'm in a bathroom. I think the Prosecco is hitting me now.
You're not at home?
The way he says home sends a shiver down my spine and a shot of warmth between my legs. I can imagine him stretched out on his couch back in the condo. Me acting as his blanket.
Ruby, where are you?
I'm at a party.
A party?
He parrots. He shifts in his chair, setting down his mug, the furrow in his brow growing deeper.
What party? Who are you with?
Now, I don't usually appreciate it when a guy pulls the territorial business. Mostly I'm very much a 21st century woman, and I feel like I have the right to do what I want, when I want, without having to answer for it. Obviously, if I'm in a committed relationship, I'm fully committed. I don't play games or mess around. But there's something about the way he's asking, as if there's a hint of panic, that warms all the parts below the waist. Well, warms them more than they already were, which means my panties are thinking about lighting themselves on fire.
Ruby, is the connection bad?
Oh, sorry. You froze there for a second. I lie. Amy forced me to come out to this party. I didn't ask enough questions, obviously, because it's not at some huge event hall. It's at some Richie Rich's house. Well, house isn't a very good descriptor, actually. I'm pretty sure this qualifies as a mansion, seeing as this powder room is the size of my old apartment.
Who's throwing the party? Is it one of Armstrong's friends?
Bancroft's voice is suddenly low and even.
I assume so. Or maybe a colleague?
I'm distracted by the way Bancroft's jaw is working.
Except me and him, everyone here is either engaged or married.
I guess someone wanted to play matchmaker.
Amelie's trying to set you up with someone?
Now he sounds incredulous. I might not be the most civilized, refined woman out there, but I don't think I'm a bad catch. Maybe a little untamed, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Not Amy. Armstrong, apparently. And I shouldn't have to sit at home alone every night.
I say defensively.
You're not alone. You have Tiny and Francesca and me.
The incredulity is replaced with irritation.
Who's he trying to set you up with?
Wentworth something or other. I'm trying to figure Bancroft out. The flirting and the sometimes overly sexual comments have become commonplace in our conversations and, frankly, something I look forward to. But earlier this week, he called me babe. And now he says things like this. And he's acting rather jealous. For all the distance currently between us, we've been spending an awful lot of time together. It's blurring the lines I've made in my head a little.
Wentworth Williams?
The incredulity turns to something like anger.
That's it, yes.
Oh, fuck no. You can't date him.
Pardon me?
I set the phone down on the vanity and start rummaging around in my purse for my lipstick. I hate being told what to do.
He's an elitist fuckhead cocksucker. He's not allowed in my condo, ever. You can't date him. I forbid it.
You forbid it?
Yes.
Really?
I prop a hand on my hip. Then realize Bancroft's current view is of my purse, not me. I move it aside. Now he has a very good view of my dress, which I'm filling out nicely these days. The angle is actually rather flattering, and it makes my boobs look amazing. Bancroft runs a rough hand through his hair. It's an absolute mess. He's all furrowed brow and ticking jaw. God damn it. Why does he have to look so hot when he's being a jerk?
What are you wearing?
He snaps.
A dress? What does it look like?
I think I look nice.
I see cleavage. You have cleavage. Don't you have a shawl? Can't you cover up?
Excuse me?
I look down at my chest and cut my boobs, making sure I'm not flashing anyone anything they shouldn't see. Everything is right where it should be.
My cleavage looks fantastic, and it's modest, not excessive.
You can't. Wentworth is an asshole. He dated my friend's sister's cousin last year, and she found out he was cheating on her, with three other women, and one of them was a damn escort.
He is not sitting down anymore. I think he might be pacing with how unsteady the phone is.
Escort? Isn't that just a nice term for prostitute?
Yes.
That's dirty.
Yes, it is. So you understand why I forbid you to date him.
The forbid makes me bristle. It's a word my father used to toss around all the time. While I have zero intention of pursuing anything with Wentworth, I don't think it hurts to keep Bancroft on the edge a little, especially since I hate that word, and he's being bossy. I don't think he's interested in dating me.
With you dressed the way you are, I'm pretty sure you're wrong about that.
And now he's insulting my outfit.
I think he's more interested in a hookup.
Bancroft's jaw clenches. His nostrils flare. His eyes narrow and darken. Dear God, it's hot. Hotter than it should be.
Ruby.
The word is a grave warning. I smile sweetly at him and purposely adjust my dress so I'm showing more cleavage instead of less. Don't worry, Bane. I would never bring a hookup back to your condo. I have to go. We're in the middle of dinner, and I've been gone longer than is appropriate.
Ruby, don't hang up.
I end the call and power down my phone before he can get the rest out. My stomach is doing all kinds of acrobatics. A bead of sweat trickles down my spine. Bancroft is acting like a jealous ass. And he's being territorial. Over me and my cleavage. It makes me giddy. I don't have rules for this particular tennis match. I like Bancroft. If he wasn't across an ocean and I wasn't relying on him for my current modest income and a place to live, I would definitely want to find myself under him, in his bed, or on his couch, or floor, or anywhere, really. But current circumstances prevent that. So, for the time being, I'm going to let him stew for acting the part of a Neanderthal, even if I find it sexy. He doesn't need to know that.
Chapter 12. Mine. Bancroft. She did not just hang up on me. I stare at the blank screen for a couple of seconds before I hit redial. It goes straight to voicemail. I try again and get the same thing. Somewhere in my head, beyond the white noise, I recognize I'm being irrational. I don't honestly think Ruby is going to hook up with Wentworth. She has better taste than that. All conversations up to this point indicate she does. I think. I hope. The image of that jack-off in my condo in my spare bedroom with her, naked and under him, makes me want to get on a plane and go home right the fuck now. Which, again, is highly irrational. Unless I can wrap things up here faster, I still have a few weeks before I'm home. I'll need a miracle to make that happen at the rate we're going. Beyond the possible hookup with Wentworth, which I know is unlikely, I'm actually not all that excited about the idea that Ruby might be interested in dating anyone. In the time she's been staying in my place, the part of the day I've been looking forward to the most is our almost daily video chats. After endless meetings and hours spent dealing with a room full of type A personalities and the fine details of project management, Ruby is a breath of fresh air. She's the person I want to come home to the most, which is kind of a problem, I suppose, because I'm not her boyfriend and she's supposed to move out when I get back. I have no idea if she's been dating anyone, casually or otherwise, while I've been away. I certainly haven't had time for that. Well, I suppose that's not 100% true. There have been a few women who have expressed interest in spending time with me, but my schedule doesn't accommodate dates. Not when I have calls with Ruby scheduled in the evening. Although while I've been in Amsterdam, I started calling first thing in the morning instead, since I'm an early riser and she seems to be a nighthawk. Her bedwear is my favorite, little tanks with shorts. Sometimes I can see her nipples through the fabric. But it's not just about nipple visuals, it's far more than that. Ruby is a vibrant, gorgeous woman with a mind of her own. She has fire and sass. I like her. A lot. She's funny and witty and sweet. We seem to share the same views on how frustrating family expectations can be. I like talking to her and hearing her perspective is always refreshing. She doesn't just say things to bolster my ego. It's a nice change from some of the women I've dated in the past. She'd be a great plus one at some of these terrible, stuck-up parties I'm forced to attend. I want to take her out. I want to take her to bed. My bed. The one she's always lying on with Francesca. None of that is going to happen, though, if she starts seeing someone else in the time I'm gone. It could happen. Beyond how lovely she is to look at, her father's bankroll is desirable. That alone would be reason enough for many of the single guys in Armstrong's circle to be interested. It would make her doubly alluring for an asshole like Wentworth. I try calling again, but I get tossed into voicemail. She must have turned her phone off. That's fine. I have other ways to get in touch with her. I call Armstrong's phone, but unfortunately I get his voicemail too. So I call again, and a third time. Hello? He sounds annoyed. Hey, Armstrong. Bane, how are you? I'm fine. Good. He murmurs something and I hear the sound of a chair moving across the floor and voices in the background. That's great. I hear the projects are going well. How's Amsterdam? Have you been taking advantage of some of the perks over there? Of course, that's his first question. If you're referring to the weed cafes, the answer is no. I'm sure Lex is out partaking. He's been off for the last few weeks, and I can't figure it out. Regardless, one of us needs to be able to pay attention at the morning meetings. I was thinking along other lines. I'm not risking the health of my dick for a trip to the red light district. It's definitely something I could see Armstrong doing prior to Amelie. I'm disappointed in you, Bane. You can't even be bothered to enjoy yourself while you're in a country where prostitution is legal. Too bad it's me here and not you, huh? I'd certainly be taking full advantage of the perks. I snort. Except you're engaged. It's another time zone. It doesn't count. I don't laugh at his joke. Listen, Ruby mentioned that she was going out for dinner tonight with you and Amelie. Is she available? I've tried to call her, but maybe she has her phone on silent. She's here. We're in the middle of dinner, though. Can I have her call you back? It's a bit of an emergency. It would be better if I spoke with her now. The lie sits uncomfortably in my throat. Even I'm questioning what I'm doing right now. I'll get her. His voice is muffled as he covers the receiver. I hear Ruby's confused voice, also still muffled. He said it's an emergency. That's Armstrong.
Oh? Okay.
The phone must change hands. I hear the muted clip of heels and a door opening and closing, followed by Ruby's muttered, "Emergency my ass." A second later, her annoyed voice is right in my ear.
Are you fucking kidding me with this, Bancroft?
I love it when she says my name. I love that she rarely shortens it, and when she does, it always sounds a little breathless. I also love that she's pissed off at me and swearing. I have a problem, I know. Did you turn your phone off? I don't know why this is my leading question. Yes? You can't do that. Her heavy exhalation of breath does amazing things to my dick. I adjust my semi and smile. I can when you're acting like an asshole, she snaps. I'm concerned. About what? I told you I wouldn't hook up with douchey McHornball. What more do you want? That's not what you said at all. That's exactly what I said. I wish I could see her right now. I imagine her with a hand propped on her hip, chin tipped up in defiance. No, you said you wouldn't bring him back to my condo. You left that wide open for interpretation and other possibilities. What are you even talking about? She falters a little. It's all I need. And I think you did it on purpose. You're not making sense. Her voice wavers. Is there a purpose to this phone call, or are you just looking to start a fight over perceived context? It's not perceived context. You're infuriating. What exactly is the issue here?
I already told you I'm concerned.
Because? You're under the influence and you're susceptible to making bad decisions when you've been drinking.
Oh, my God, you are seriously pissing me off right now.
You kissed a perfect stranger after one drink in the past. You don't think that's a poor decision? I'm pushing her buttons. It's a bad idea, but I can't stop myself. I don't want someone like Wentworth to get her intoxicated and take advantage of her. I want to be the one to do that, repeatedly. Okay, that sounded bad in my head. I'd like her to be sober and willing when I get her naked.
This is your emergency. You're going to shame me over kissing you back for what purpose? To ensure I don't sleep with some jerk-off friend of Armstrong's? I assure you, I'm not the least bit interested in Wentworth. He's the exact opposite of my type, but if you call again tonight and try and pull more of this bullshit on me, I'm going to sleep with him out of spite.
You will not.
Are you still trying to tell me what to do?
I'm pretty sure she would reach through the phone right now if she could and throttle me. There's no way you would sleep with someone just to spite me.
Are you sure about that, Bane?
Her voice is suddenly soft, menacing even.
Are you willing to test that theory?
There's no right answer to that, I realize, as I open and close my mouth and no words find their magical way out. I'm not totally sure. I think I'm right. I hope I'm right. I get the sense that Ruby is a bit more traditional than she likes to let on, or at least she's more selective. Her embarrassment over kissing me back tells me this. I also think she's far more liable to make rash, poorly thought-out decisions when she's been drinking, hence her kissing me back in the first place, which I don't regret in the slightest. What I do regret, maybe just a little, is not staking some kind of claim prior to leaving her in my condo, although at the time I had only known her for 2 days. That might have been a little weird and preemptive. All it would have taken was a few words. If Ms. Blackwood hadn't interrupted our goodbye, I would have followed through on that kiss, and maybe we wouldn't be having this argument. I take a deep breath and go with honesty. Ruby Scott, I know better than to think I can tell you what to do, but the very last thing I want is for someone as dickish as Wentworth to get his hands on you, especially if it's solely for the purpose of spite. I get breathing for several seconds, deep breathing, the kind I'm not opposed to, the kind I'd like to hear as a result of my abilities to make her feel extraordinary, in a very sexual way. I'm going to hang up now, Bane, and you're not going to call me back tonight because I don't think you want to see how far you can push before you reach my limit. I don't get another word out before the dial tone happens. As much as I want to call her back right away, I know it's a bad idea. A very bad idea. So I keep it together and leave things alone. It's late, I should go to bed. But I can't because all I can think about now is that fuck Wentworth and how one man can put things in perspective and screw everything up for me at the same time. It's been 48 hours. I tried to call Ruby yesterday. The only response I received were pictures of Tiny and Francesca, like their ransom notes in image form. Tiny was on the back of her hand. Francesca was hiding under my sheets, my messed up sheets. I remind her that she has my pets and she has access to all my things, including my bed. I may not have reacted well to the Wentworth situation. I called Armstrong the next day and ripped him a new asshole, except he seemed to think my reaction was hilarious and uncalled for. Then he went on to tell me I had nothing to worry about because Ruby was a frigid bitch as far as he could tell, and he doubted she opened her legs or her mouth for anyone. I ripped him an additional asshole for that comment. I also know that's untrue. She opened her mouth for me, and I'm hoping her legs will eventually follow. A full 57 hours later, she finally picks up when I called her via video chat. I had apology flowers delivered this morning, hoping it would defrost her a little. Hey, I say, by way of greeting. She glares at me through the two-dimensional screen. If I was in my condo with her, there are so many ways I could wipe that glare off her face. But I'm an ocean away, so all I have are words. I'm sorry. The side of her mouth twitches just a little. It's barely a tick. She's eating pasta. She dips her fork into the bowl and lifts it, twirling the noodles slowly, keeping her eyes fixed on her food. Ruby opens her mouth. Her luscious-looking mouth, the one I've had my tongue in, the one I'd like to have wrapped around my... The fork slides between her lips. A noise startles her, and then I realize it's me, groaning. The fork slides out from between her lips. She's eating pasta primavera. The sauce is oil and garlic-based. Her breath would be horrible right now, but her lips are glistening, and I have no control over my head or where it goes, or how hard the one in my pants gets. She has the upper hand. She knows it. She raises a brow and chews slowly. It takes forever before she speaks. You're sorry? Yes. It comes out low and raspy. God damn it. I need to get a handle on myself. Not a real handle, well, at least not while I'm talking to her. Afterward, maybe. Why is she so sexy? Why do I like that she refuses to let me get away with the shit I pulled the other night? Why am I looking so forward to her wrath? What exactly are you sorry for, being an asshole? The flowers came? I sort of expected them to smooth things over for me a little better than they have. They did. They're beautiful. But I'd still like to know what exactly you're sorry enough for that you'd send flowers. That's a great question. It's also legitimate. The card didn't exactly allow for an extended inscription, so I went with sorry for being an asshole. I need to word my explanation in a way that isn't going to get me into more trouble. For questioning your character. When all I get is more staring, I continue. I'm well aware that you're an intelligent woman who is more than capable of making sound decisions. My concern wasn't your ability to make decisions, but Wentworth's propensity for taking advantage when he sees opportunity. Her silence is long. Her chewing is slow. She sets her fork down and dabs daintily at her mouth with a napkin. Well, I suppose your concern is warranted. Wentworth is a massive douche, and I did kiss a random stranger under the influence of a single martini. But in my defense, it was rather unexpected, and he was incredibly attractive. Now I'm silent. Was? But isn't incredibly attractive anymore. Recent behavior has taken him down a few points. A few. I'm sure with some good behavior he'll be able to recover most of them. How many points did I lose? You think I'm talking about you? The lightness in her tone drops as she continues, and her focus moves away from me to her pasta. How do you know I haven't kissed any other random strangers under the influence of a single martini while you've been off enjoying the extracurriculars in Amsterdam? Extracurriculars? She lifts her fork, twisting the noodles, but they slip off, along with what appears to be false bravado. Come on, Bane, you're in the country where narcotics are legal and so is prostitution. I'm sure it's not all work and no play. You think I'd pay for sex just because it's legal? She lifts a shoulder in a careless shrug, but her body language is stiff. In the time I've been away, I've become fairly good at reading her. She's expressive. Hand gestures, the look on her face, her posture all tell me things her thorny words do not. The idea of this bothers her, and that makes me happy, because I feel like we are on a level playing field now. Honestly, Ruby? It comes out with real bite. Her gaze shifts my way. I see the thing I want. Worry. I'm offended, I say. You should know me better than that by now, don't you think? She scoffs. What's that supposed to mean? This time when her gaze drops, so does her voice. Armstrong implied you were enjoying the perks. Fucking Armstrong. The next time I play golf with him, I'm going to Charlie horse him with a 9-iron. Armstrong can be an asshole. She fiddles with her napkin, twisting it until it tears. So you're not enjoying the perks? You haven't even gone to a cafe and smoked a hookah? Is that an approved activity or will it cost me more points? A hint of a smile tugs at the corner of her mouth. You might even earn some back if you send me a picture. I wish I could reach through the screen and touch her. You could use it for blackmail purposes. She bats her lashes. You think I would stoop to such low tactics? I don't know. You did lead me to believe you intended to sleep with Wentworth. My faith is shaken a little. You were trying to tell me what to do. You were drunk and at risk of poor decision-making. I counter. She leans in closer, eyes narrowed, her fire having returned. I was not drunk. I arch a brow. She tips her head to the side and concedes. Okay, I was a little drunk, and there was cleavage, excessive cleavage. It wasn't excessive, it was a perfectly tasteful amount of cleavage. You used the word forbid. At this point, you should know that words like can't and forbid make me want to do exactly the opposite. You know what happened the last time someone forbid me to do something? I hope it wasn't sleep with an asshole. I have so many inappropriate thoughts going through my head. I'd like to test out her response to the word forbid in a variety of scenarios. Ruby shoots me a dirty look as if she can read my mind. No, I moved to New York and pursued my dream. She mutters something else that I don't quite catch. Anyway, if you still have enough time to do something fun that doesn't include prostitutes, I highly recommend enjoying a few hours in a cafe with a hookah. It might calm you down a little. I run a hand through my hair. I'm usually very calm. Unless cleavage and Wentworth are involved. I'm fine with the cleavage as long as it's not combined with Wentworth. But any other time, the cleavage is acceptable. I'm not answering that. I'm working my way into a points deficit, and this feels like a trap. She points the fork at the screen and smiles deviously. You're learning. How are my other two girls? I ask, intent on changing the topic so I don't get myself into more trouble. Ruby blinks a few times as if I've shocked her. Other two girls? Tiny and Francesca. I like her in green. Oh, right. She shakes her head a little. Do you want to see them? When you're finished eating, don't let your food get cold. I'm full, it's fine. She takes me over to the terrarium first, where Tiny is resting on a rock. Then she goes over to Francesca's cage and takes her out, walking down the hall to my bedroom. Sorry, your bed's not made. We were in here earlier. There's some rustling sound. I hear a few things hit the floor, and then she sets the device up against the pillows and climbs up onto the bed. My bed. She's wearing those tiny little shorts of hers again. And a tank. Her legs are incredible. I want her ankles resting on my shoulders and the very limited amount of clothing she's wearing to be gone when that happens. Not that I've been thinking about this scenario a lot or anything. Francesca runs around on the bed, playing hide-and-seek under the covers until she gets tired. Then she crawls onto Ruby's lap and sticks her head under her shirt. What's going on there? She likes to hide out between my boobs. Francesca peeks her head out of the neckline. Smart girl, I reply. I can't wait to go home. Actually, I'm hoping to be back sooner than I originally planned. I only have a few more things to do in Amsterdam, and then it's back to London. Lexington is going before me to tie up some loose ends there, which is great because he's driving me batshit nuts with all of his micromanaging. I also think his inability to lay off of the perks here is interfering with work. Normally, he's pretty good at moderation, but it doesn't seem that way right now. He needs to dry out for a few days. I've done all the sightseeing I want to. Home is where I want to be most. In my own bed, eating my own food, prepared in my own kitchen. I want dinner with Ruby, except she's likely going to be moving out when I get back, which I'm not all that excited about. I like my time with her. How's the job hunt going? Ruby bites her lip and her gaze shifts away. It's okay. I have another audition later this week. I have a couple of interviews for some part-time work outside of theater, just for something a bit more steady. Oh, that's good news, then? Her tone makes me think it's the opposite. That she's looking for something outside of acting must mean she's having difficulty finding a role, and that seems like a real travesty. She's a born actress from the stories she's told me. From the moment she could talk, she's been performing. School Christmas concerts, drama classes, lead roles in every high school production. Even her first kiss was on a stage. She said it was awful because the lead had eaten a burger with raw onions on it before they rehearsed the scene. She sounds exactly like I was with rugby, except she's starting and I've already been down that road. Oh yeah, definitely. Things are looking up. And what about apartment hunting? How's that going? Have you found anything suitable yet? It's another reason I want to come home early. I'd at least like a little time with Ruby before she moves out. Well, I'm still looking, but I have a few friends I can stay with once you're back. Her fingernails are at her lips. She's not biting, but I think she'd like to be. That seems like a lot of unnecessary work. What does? Moving your stuff again? Well, I don't have much to move, right? Still, it seems pointless. To move out when I get back, I mean. You might as well stay until you find something that works, if you want. That's very kind of you to offer, Bancroft, but I don't want to impose. You've already done more than enough for me. It's not an imposition, Ruby. I have the space, and Francesca loves you. I'd hate for you to have to move all your things just to do it all over again. And there's no point in rushing. I don't want you to end up in some dive just because you feel like you're imposing when you're not. Ruby props her cheek on her fist. Francesca is still snuggled up in her cleavage with her head poking out. You're sure it's okay? Positive. I have lots of space. Obviously, I'll pay rent and help out with groceries. We can negotiate that later. I'm not particularly worried about it. I don't want a free ride. I'd be more than happy to give Ruby all the free rides she wants, but I keep that to myself. We'll figure it out when I'm back. Okay. Thanks, Bancroft. You're being awfully good to me, especially considering I gave you the silent treatment for 2 days. I'm trying to earn back some points. Where am I now? She smiles and ducks her head, then scratches under Francesca's chin, which is conveniently located very close to her boobs. I've never been so jealous of a ferret as I am now. It gives me a legitimate reason to stare. Her eyes lift and a small smile appears. A solid 9.5 now. You're almost back where you started. Excellent. Letting her stay is a curveball I've thrown myself, but I don't plan to allow it to get in the way of my ultimate goal.
Chapter 13. Jobs for the Jobless. Ruby. My living situation is ironed out for the time being, which is good, because I was about to go into panic mode with Bancroft coming home soon. I really wish time would slow down. Okay, so you have a place to live for now. That's good. Amy sounds reassured. I nod, although I'm not sure I can call the situation good. Bancroft is going to let me stay in his apartment until I can find a new place. It's highly preferable to the alternative. Until now, I've been relatively positive about things. But the closer we get to Bancroft's return, the more worried I become about having to return to Rhode Island to work with the whore mother. Beyond that, the excessive flirting and banter with Bancroft felt more acceptable when there was an end date to my stay at his condo. When I was just his temporary pet sitter, it seemed harmless to engage. Now that I'm going to be his roommate for a while, I'm not sure how acceptable it is anymore. It could get messy, especially if things don't work out, and I'm still living there. And you're on top of the job thing. You have an audition tomorrow, right? Everything is working out just fine. Now Amy sounds like me. And I have a couple of interviews for regular jobs. I'm glad one of us is optimistic. She sips her cleansing tea. She's on some sort of healthy eating program. It sounds a lot like a diet, which is absolutely ridiculous. Amy is tiny. She's never had to work to be that way. She's just naturally built like a model. She's never been worried about her weight until recently. I'm attributing it to Armstrong's constant unnecessary commentary. I'm liking him less and less the more I get to know him. What kind of interviews do you have? One is at a restaurant, the other is a cafe. I just need some quick money to help me get by. I've avoided nightclubs so far. I don't want to end up dealing with the same situation I did in the last place. Oh. Amy makes a face that looks disapproving. What if I talk to Armstrong about getting you something temporary? Thanks, but I'd rather you not. If I take a job from Armstrong, it'll get back to my father. I don't want that. Come on, Ruby. It would just be until you get the role you deserve. I sip my coffee. I need all the liquid energy I can get. After this, I'm back to handing out resumes and filling out applications. To places I should have worked when I was in college, not after it. What happens when Bancroft comes back? I know I can stay for a little while longer, but eventually I'm going to have to find a place to live that isn't his spare bedroom. Like his actual bedroom. You'll have a place to live. I'm not so sure that's true, but I don't want to put this on Amy. It's my fault I'm in this predicament. She's done enough by getting me a place to stay while I try to sort out my life. It'd be great if I could actually make some headway on that front. Do you smell that? Amy's nose wrinkles as I pull my phone out of my purse. I sniff and get a whiff of something disgustingly rancid. I put my hand over my mouth to stop from breathing it in again. What is that? I look around the cafe, curious to whether there's a garbage truck nearby. I don't know. We should go. That smells toxic. I gather my things. I have job hunting to do anyway. Coffee dates are for people who are actually taking a break from being productive. For some reason, the horrible smell from the cafe seems to stick with me all day. I keep